Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who's brought considerable intelligence to bear in a number of different incarnations at the senior-most levels of the United States government, I'm very pleased to say, is with us to talk a bit about some of his insights into the world in which we find ourselves these days and what we best be doing about it to make sure it doesn't go badly for us. He is Dr. Jack Caravelli. He served as an intelligence analyst in the Central Intelligence Agency, specializing back in the Cold War on what was, about as important as anything at the time, Soviet strategic forces. He was also a member of the White House National Security Council staff, a deputy assistant secretary of the Department of Energy with responsibility for proliferation and threat reduction. These days, he is a managing partner at the Trilateral Group and a visiting professor at the UK Defense Academy. He's also the author of several important books, including most recently The Age of Hatred, Islam, Iran, and the New Middle East. Jack Caravelli, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Great pleasure to be here, Frank. Thanks very much.
Well, there's so much to talk about, Jack. I think I'd like to start, though, with your thoughts based, I presume, in part on your now rather frequent exposure to what's going on in Britain as a result of your teaching there, in connection with this business of Britain's referendum on whether it should exit the European Union, the so-called Brexit. What do you make of the vote? What led up to it, and where do you think it leaves Britain at the moment?
Yes. So far this year, I've made 5 trips to London. So I think I'm in touch with what's been going on and, you know, see the arc of, I guess, public opinion, you know, since January. The shock to the system, as it were, you know, is reflected in all the papers that act as if the sky is falling, simply was the expectation that although the vote was expected to be close, that the majority would vote to remain in the EU. And as you know, Frank, that's exactly what did not happen. Now we are into historic, unprecedented territory. There's never been a nation that has voted to leave the European Union. But I think the reasons for that are not hard to find. I think some of that goes back to, you know, a real growing sense of frustration among the majority of UK voters that the EU was not serving their interests. Our mutual good friend, Dr. Liam Fox, the former British Defense Secretary, told me in London a few weeks ago that over 50% of the laws that the UK has to enforce come from Brussels, from the EU, and not from the British Parliament. You know, that really, you know, I think caught public opinion and angered them, as well as the, you know, clear failure now for well over a year of the Europeans writ large to control the migration problem. So I think there are a number of factors that came together. The financial markets, as you know, have been tumultuous, in part because of the unexpected nature of all this. But I think we should all take a collective deep breath. You know, the UK is still an important nation. It's still a member of NATO. There are problems to be solved and issues to be addressed. But, you know, there's no reason to think that if cool heads on sort of both sides of the English Channel prevail, that we can't get, you know, a good transition and one that, you know, really does not jeopardize, among other things, the Western alliance.
That's certainly to be hoped for, Jack. I guess one of the countervailing pressures might be that there seems to be a certain appetite in at least some quarters on both sides of the pond, I think it's fair to say, that Britain should be punished for what it's done here, for sort of countermanding the direction towards supranationalism, as I think you've put it, and creating you know, a rift that, well, it, frankly, others might be tempted to follow in exiting the EU as well. Give us a sense of how that looks from your perspective. Is that, in fact, in play?
Well, I think it is in play, certainly in some quarters, if you read the statements coming out of different nations on the continent. I think that if those, you know, in France or Germany or elsewhere, you know, would try to impose, quote-unquote, any punishments on the UK for the vote, that would be extremely short-sighted, totally unhelpful to all sides. And I think, among other things, I think as you were implying, it certainly could backfire on sort of the punishers, simply because not only in the UK is there, you know, deep concern about how the EU operates and in the heavy-handed way that in which it tries to govern its members. So, you know, we are seeing now, and the UK vote may only be the tip of the iceberg, Frank, in terms of others, perhaps in France, in Italy, in the Netherlands, who may push very hard for similar referendums. So the UK vote a month or 2 months or three from now may look like just the, you know, the tip of the iceberg. So we are really into uncharted territory. But for those, to get to your question, who would punish the Brits for some reason for having democracy work, you know, I think is going to backfire and serves no good interest.
Well, I think it certainly doesn't serve that of the British people or our interests, which I think are in favor of sovereignty and accountable government, limited government at that. And indeed, Jack Caravelli, one of the things that Donald Trump argued in the immediate aftermath of this vote is that there are certain parallels between what impelled a majority of the British voters to approve this referendum for withdrawing from the EU and popular sentiment here in the United States as well. Do you see it that way? And in particular, I guess I'd ask you about the problem that I'll be talking about shortly with Dr. Charles Jacobs involving immigration and what it implies for our country, not just for those in Europe, including the Brits.
Yes, well, I think the parallels are not perfect. They're not exact, but I think Trump makes a, you know, a valid point. You know, the parallels, I think, you know, to some extent, and it's hard to quantify, of course, but the parallels do exist, beginning with, as you mentioned, the immigration problem. It's a very sore point for the Brits, has been in all my visits. I keep hearing the same things from people on all parts of the political spectrum, that they realize there is deep concern about the growing Muslim population in the UK. Of course, that's a much smaller nation than ours, both in size and population. But when you extend that parallel to the United States, obviously, Donald Trump, whether one likes his political style or not, has touched and reached into a deep vein, I think, in American, you know, observations that, you know, our immigration problems are considerable and just as frustrating. Again, you know, with the powers that be in our government today, those problems are not being addressed, they're not being solved. And, you know, Trump, again, setting aside style, deserves, I think, considerable credit, you know, for reaching in, touching that nerve. And anyone who would blindly or, you know, put their head in the sand, you know, perhaps in the Democratic Party and think that those parallels don't exist, they're probably whistling past the graveyard. Now, if Trump can exploit it fully in a general election, obviously we don't know. But those parallels are there. They're powerful. And they should not be ignored.
Do you anticipate that the United Kingdom will come apart over all of this?
You know, I think on the first, I think there's a very real chance, not just in my judgment, but in those of colleagues I respect in London, certainly at the very least, that Scotland will push very hard for a second referendum. As you know, there was one in 2014, you know, to separate from the UK and, you know, to turn around and try to join the EU. I think there's easily at least a 50% chance that will happen. And, you know, what we saw from the vote last week, you know, the Scottish voters who at least turned out on Brexit, you know, did vote in a large majority, you know, to remain. Their desire was to remain in the EU. So that's still an unresolved problem. In terms of future leaders, you know, again, if I had a crystal ball, I would say and this is just sort of the common wisdom, and we've seen that that is far from perfect. Obviously, Boris Johnson gets a lot of press, a lot of attention. He's flamboyant. He is intelligent. I don't know if he's got the leadership qualities the Tory party, the Conservative Party, needs.
At the moment, particularly, yeah. We'll be watching it closely, as I know will you, Jack Caravelli. We'll be speaking with you again in a moment about nuclear deterrence, another area of your expertise, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined once again by Dr. Jack Caravelli, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Department of Energy with deep expertise in matters involving nuclear issues, nuclear nonproliferation, and forces, ours and hostiles. And Jack, let me just ask you to tap into that expertise for a moment. We have spent a lot of time here at Secure Freedom Radio talking with various experts and officials and legislators about the increasing menace posed by the Russian nuclear buildup, the Chinese nuclear buildup, developments in the nuclear arena in North Korea, in Iran, and so on. And juxtapose that with what seems to be a very, very seriously inadequate program of our own in terms of particularly the modernization of our deterrent. What are your thoughts on how serious the threat is and how important it is that we do rather better by our own deterrent?
Well, Frank, you have been a leader on this, and you know you deserve great, great praise and appreciation for that. I very much am in the camp where you are. I think you and I both know through our careers, and we've seen close up, that nuclear weapons work as a deterrent. They were a bulwark of and a centerpiece of U.S. foreign and military policy literally for decades through the Cold War and even in the post-Cold War era. Unfortunately, what this administration has done over the past nearly 8 years now is squander that advantage and fail to appreciate the continuing obligation and role that nuclear weapons play in defending, you know, not only our interests, but the interests of our allies as well around the world. The administration has not supported the modernization of our forces very well at all. The budgets have been squeezed badly, and that is starting to really erode not only our nuclear capabilities, but those of our conventional forces. And as you said, this doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's occurring at a time when both the Russians and the Chinese are moving in an entirely opposite direction. They both conceptually understand that, you know, as horrific as it may sound, nuclear weapons have a role in their strategies. And, you know, I can only express the hope that whoever occupies the White House in January next year, you know, understands these dynamics and will at least begin to try to reverse these trends. But whoever that is has 8 years of digging to make up. So, you know, I am deeply concerned, as you are.
Jack Carivelli is our guest. We're talking about nuclear deterrence. There was an interesting book review you published recently about a book by Brad Roberts, a man who spent a long time in Democratic administrations in the nuclear arena. He seems to have come round to the view that you and I have, that these are rather important instruments for preventing conflict, and that we may be in need of considerably more effort in this space. Talk about Brad Roberts' assessment and whether this perhaps portends the reemergence of a bipartisan awakening on the need for a renewed commitment to peace through strength, if you will.
On the Roberts book, Brad Roberts, as you said, did serve in the Clinton administration, but his book, The Case for Nuclear Weapons in the 21st Century, really is well-researched. It is thorough. He clearly has a strong and deep understanding of the historical context, as we're discussing, you know, for U.S. nuclear weapons. He does not romanticize, as does, you know, the president, Barack Obama, that, you know, we can, you know, anytime soon move to a world, you know, without nuclear weapons. You know, I give him credit for, you know, seeing the world as it is. And again, you and I both served in senior policy jobs. And, you know, it's the duty of elected officials and their staffs and the senior officials to, again, do just that, to see the world as it exists rather than the way we might want it to be. And unfortunately, that's not something that Barack Obama has been willing to do. You know, and again, there's nothing revolutionary in what Roberts says. He just says, you know, we need to remember where we've been, why it succeeded, and the importance of staying the course. And I think, if we find, you know, a president who can do that beginning next January, you know, we'll be fine. But without that, we will continue to be at serious risk of the continuing growing might you know, of Russia and China as a start.
Could I just ask you, Jack, on an area of particular expertise, whether one of the tragic, I guess, ironies of President Obama's pursuit of a legacy in this area has likely to be increased proliferation of nuclear weapons around the world, the man who professed this commitment to ridding the world of these things may in fact have ushered in a period in which there are more nations than ever that have them, and as a result, perhaps the world will be, as you say, more dangerous.
It will be more dangerous. Let me give you one example, Frank, quickly. You know, part of the title of my book, The New Middle East, really refers to this topic you've just raised. And let me just sort of pick on the Middle East here for a moment. We know the problems with the nuclear deal with Iran. What we haven't focused on very much are the consequences as other nations in the region, you know, look at the situation. You know, it is quite clear now that within Abu Dhabi, within the Emirates, in Abu Dhabi, there's going to be a commercial nuclear program. They're going to open a nuclear reactor next year, and in coming years, we'll add three more. The Saudis have also said they're going to go commercial nuclear. The Egyptians, Jordanians may well do the same. Now, why does this matter? Commercial power on the surface is great. You know, it's clean. It provides a lot of electricity for growing populations. But what you and I know is there's a codicil. There's a second part where much, not all, of the technology, the expertise that goes into a commercial nuclear reactor program has applicability to a nuclear weapons program. Now, I'm not saying they're all going to do it, but what we can conclude is, look, these guys know the science and technology as well as we do, and as they pursue, again, in a seemingly benign way, commercial nuclear power, which, again, is perfectly legitimate, you know, they all know that if Iran does indeed break out, if the deal with Iran falls apart, which it certainly could, you know, they want to be positioned to respond in kind. The Saudis have said clearly, we will not be a second-rate power in the region. And you know as well as I do, the political angst between the Saudis and Iran on the best days. So, you know, we've got to watch this region very, very closely, because it could change enormously in the next 5 years or so.
Today, we've seen the release of reports by the Benghazi Select Committee and some of its members. Your thoughts on that episode?
Yes, tragic. Ambassador Stevens was a friend, a colleague, and I mourn his loss. It was totally, in my judgment, unnecessary, and I'll make only one comment. On Hillary Clinton's watch as Secretary of State, her State Department received from Ambassador Stevens, from his security officers, you know, in Libya, multiple requests, Frank, for stepped up U.S. support resources to make the embassy and the people at the embassy in Libya more secure. On every occasion, Hillary Clinton's State Department denied, turned down the requests, and I think that's unconscionable. And in my judgment, leaving aside what happened after the tragedy in Benghazi, before the attacks was a real tragedy itself. We let those people down. Stevens did not have to die, and those around him. And to me, Hillary Clinton has nothing but blood on her hands.
Jack Caravelli, the author of The Age of Hatred, Islam, Iran, and the New Middle East. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Dr. Charles Jacobs joins us next. Right ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs, like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. For years, a public integrity organization called Judicial Watch has used the Freedom of Information Act to expose official misconduct, corruption, and malfeasance. Its revelations about former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's serial violation of government information security rules has been singularly consequential. They've even compelled the FBI and the State Department Inspector General to conduct their own inquiries. Although the case against Mrs. Clinton has become ever more damning, she continues to deny any wrongdoing. Last week, Judicial Watch released yet another batch of Hillary's emails. They suggest that her illegal homebrew server shenanigans resulted in the entire State Department's information technology system being rendered susceptible to enemy hacking. The full extent of the resulting damage to national security may never be known, but what we can say already is that such a record should disqualify Hillary Clinton from being our next commander-in-chief. This is Frank Affney.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realize their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, joined by an old friend and comrade-at-arms, in fact, a man I consider to be one of our country's great freedom fighters. He is Dr. Charles Jacobs. These days he's the president and founder of Americans for Peace and Tolerance. He's also been a driving force behind any number of other estimable organizations, including the American Anti-Slavery Group, for which service he earned the Boston Freedom Award. He's also co-founded the David Project, a terrific organization that works on countering the ideological assault on Israel. He has been named by The Forward as one of America's top 50 Jewish leaders. He has contributed mightily through these various efforts in all the right places, and some of the wrong ones, too. The New York Times comes to mind, to the public policy debate. He is also, his organization, Americans for Peace and Tolerance, has recently authored a terrific little pamphlet entitled The Case Against the Islamic Society of Boston. Charles Jacobs, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us, as always.
Thank you, Frank. It's always good to be with you.
I'm keen to get into some of the particulars of what you've developed in terms of the case against the Islamic Society of Boston, or ISB. But maybe if you just would sort of set the stage, Charles, the degree to which Boston has been cited as a sort of model city for what President Obama insists on calling his countering violent extremism program. Give us a sort of flavor of what's happening on the ground there in Boston in this space, and then the role that the ISB is playing in, well, I guess contributing to the problem rather than solving it.
Right. Well, Boston, of course, is the cradle of American liberty, and yet it has been penetrated by the Muslim Brotherhood in a very significant way. We have here the largest mosque on the eastern seaboard, I think even bigger than the one in New York City. It was founded by people who are in jail right now, a man named Ali Moody, who really is the poster boy for much of what is happening around the country, which is, I would call, deception. In fact, one of our researchers, Ilya Fechtistov, is writing a book about this, and he's calling it Masquerade. So Ali Moody comes to the Cambridge area in the 80s, and he sets up a small little mosque near Harvard and near MIT, and it's a Muslim Brotherhood mosque. And then about 10 years ago, the Saudis contributed millions and millions of dollars to construct an expansion mosque in Boston, in Roxbury, next to Northeastern, as I say, which is the largest mosque on the eastern seaboard. And on the board of this mosque sits Yusuf Karadawi, who any one of your listeners is three clicks away from hearing this man, who is the spiritual head of the Muslim Brotherhood, call for the death of every Jew on the planet, for the elimination of homosexuals, either by throwing them off the roof or by stoning them. That's the big internal debate in Islam, that which way you get rid of them. And when we called publicly for all of this to be investigated as they were building the mosque, we were sued by the mosque, and it's a famous law case, and the Boston Herald was sued, Steve Emerson was sued. The result of that suit was that they dropped it because they said we defamed them, and we didn't. But we got 40 boxes of discovery material, which we've been mining and sharing with the FBI and Homeland Security and Boston Police. Meanwhile, the ISB, the Islamic Society of Boston, has been a place where now 13 people associated with the ISB are either in jail for jihadist activities, terrorism, on the run, or dead, like the Tsarnaev, one of the Tsarnaev brothers. So Boston is the epicenter in many, many ways of the Islamist penetration, successful penetration into the social elites, into the communities of North America.
And again, we're talking with Dr. Charles Jacobs of Americans for Peace and Tolerance about his new publication, The Case Against the Islamic Society of Boston. Despite what you've said, Charles, the Muslim Brotherhood pedigree of this mosque, the direct involvement of 13 different prominent jihadists with it. This mosque was nonetheless cited by President Obama as one of his partners for this countering violent extremism program, and was to be showcased in the summit on countering violent extremism, or CVE, that he convened at the White House February a year ago. This seems to be a prime example of the sorts of influence operations that the Brotherhood has told us it will run against the United States government and civil society. This is, by the way, to be found in an explanatory memorandum, as it's called, a sort of secret plan introduced into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial. How do you explain the embrace by the president and by his administration of the ISB?
Well, now you've asked the question of questions, the mother of all questions. How do you explain the president? Well, I can say that on a local level, let's start at a local level, all politicians. So any American mayor right now, if asked by a Muslim group, no matter who, except if they were Daesh, probably, could you help us build a mosque? The mental set of postmodernism and political correctness would have him say, of course I will help you build a mosque, because otherwise it would mean that I would be racist, Islamophobic, and bigoted. It would be just like I didn't like black people. That's the problem. That's the elemental problem at the local level. And no matter how many times we have said the issue, the problem is the radicalization of the historically moderate Muslim population in New England, any criticism that we make of any segment of any Muslim population or any criticism of the dysfunctional culture of certain elements of the Muslim population, we are shut out. We are cursed. We are put up against the wall. So this has been the huge, you know, this is cognitive warfare, and the other side is winning. Now, we went to the Boston Globe, which they just did a very, very lauded tremendously in this movie called Spotlight, where the Spotlight team of the Boston Globe went out and exposed the pedophile priest scandal. And they were brave to do it. We went to those same people, and we sat with them for an hour and a half, and we showed them documentation that the people who were running the largest mosque in New England were Muslim Brotherhood, who called for the death of Jews, who called for the stoning of Muslims, of homosexuals, who taught people how to beat their wives. And the Boston Globe shut it out because of political correctness. That is the big enemy of our time. That is our own West suicide belt. Now, the president, either he's a far-left college professor who wound up in the White House, or worse, it's staggering to think of what he is doing, inviting masses of Muslim immigrants to America, specifically targeting them to the Bible Belt, it would seem, to dilute Republicanism and Christianity. It's just stunning. And, you know, people are hesitant to say what they actually think about this, as am I, but it's frightening.
It must be done. Freedom of speech is on the line, and your exercise of it, I have to say, Charles Jacobs, is both inspiring and absolutely necessary. And whether we call it political correctness or multiculturalism or diversity sensitivity or something else, let's be clear. The Brotherhood and other Sharia supremacists like them consider it to be submission. And we engage in that at our extreme peril. We'll talk more about what's happening in Boston, the cradle of liberty, with Dr. Charles Jacobs of Americans for Peace and Tolerance, right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has in 2015 begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hello, I'm Ace Lyons. As a retired 4-star admiral who served as Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet, is a special privilege for me to talk to you about an important new book just released by the Center for Security Policy, China Prepares for Conflict, and Why We Must Do the Same. The book explains that while the Obama administration has dithered over the deterioration of the Middle East and ignored Asia, China has been moving to challenge and displace the dominant role the United States has played in this region and the world since the end of World War II. I am one of 9 co-authors of this important book. The others are former Senator Jim Talent, Gordon Chang, Peter Navarro, Kevin Freeman, Bill Gertz, Frank Gaffney, Fred Flights, and Dean Chang. I explained in my chapter how China's efforts over the last 20 years to seize control of almost the entire South China Sea is an indication of new assertiveness to advance its regional dominance at the expense of the United States. I take issue with President Obama's benign neglect of the threat from China and how Beijing is building islands in the South China Sea that it plans to turn into stationary aircraft carriers to threaten freedom of navigation in this region. Like the other authors of this book, I believe the next president must act immediately to restore American leadership and its military power, both of which have been seriously undermined by the disastrous policies of President Obama. We urgently need to modernize and increase the size of our land, naval, and air forces to stand up to China and other adversaries worldwide. We also need to recognize and counter the growing cyber and intelligence threats from China. The bottom line is that our nation needs to act now. I strongly commend this important book, China Prepares for Conflict and Why We Must Do the Same. You can read it for free as an ebook on the Center's website, securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We are joined for a second segment by Dr. Charles Jacobs of Americans for Peace and Tolerance. Please go to their website, peaceandtolerance.org. You can find there the case against the Islamic Society of Boston. And also a new product involving what he calls the Axis of Bias at Weston High School. Charles, tell us a little bit about what's going on in this high school and, well, for that matter, others like it across the country.
Yes. Okay. So starting from the top, we understand that political correctness is sweeping the day. That if you send your child to school, From elementary on up, they will be sitting and stewing in what scholars call postmodernism, but what normal people call political correctness or moral relativism. And that means that all of our children are learning several propositions. There is no truth. It's just a matter of opinion. There is no reason for human conflict, that conflict resolution courses can't take care of. It's all a matter of miscommunication, that we in the West live on undeserved wealth, and that the West isn't so good. That's what all of our children are learning at base. Okay. Now, an extension of that, one extension of that, that is very, very threatening to the Jewish community, is that in that framework, Israel is no good. Israel is now a white country, my goodness. And the victims, the Palestinians, are like all of the other victims, classes that on college campuses, there's a bucket, there's a basket of these victim classes, right? Women, gays, transgenders, Latinos, Palestinians, homosexuals, etc. What's happened now on the college campuses is that there's a poisonous atmosphere against Israel and her Jewish and non-Jewish supporters. Many, many people have finally come to realize this after we've been ringing the bell for 20, 25 years. Jewish students on college campuses are hectored, intimidated by their professors, marginalized, and sometimes physically threatened. We're having a film come out in September called Privileged Hatred, where the only people on college campuses you can actually hate are, aside from white people, Jews. There are 160 branches of the Muslim Brotherhood Hamas-linked Students for Justice in Palestine across the college campuses. The Jewish community is finally alarmed. Well, guess what? The same poison that's on the college campuses has been seeping into our high schools. And under the guise of things like conflict resolution studies, peace studies, or simply history or social studies, lessons that are fabricated by very sophisticated curriculum mills, funded by Saudis and funded by radical leftists, these lessons have now reached American high schools and junior high schools. So we found in Newton, Massachusetts, which is a leafy, heavily Jewish suburb of Boston, outrageous things said against Jews. There was a father came to us and he said his daughter asked him if it's true that Jews murder Arab women in Israeli jails. And he went berserk. And he found out that there is a book called The Arab World Studies Notebook that was being used in his daughter's class. And that book was funded by Aramco. And that book was inserted into a workshop that the teachers went to at Harvard University. And that the Harvard University Middle East Research Center, which was also funded by the Gulf States, right, and run by anti-Israel activists, had been able to infect all of the high school teachers in Newton with these materials. And we are focusing on the Jewish stuff because we're in the Jewish community. I have to tell you, it's just as bad or worse for the Christians.
Charles Jacobs, again, is our guest. Dr. Jacobs is the president and founder of Americans for Peace and Tolerance. And one of the vehicles for some of this indoctrination, Charles, that you've come across, that gave rise, in fact, I guess, to your title of this project, Axis of Bias at Western High School, is something called the Axis of Hope. I'm not familiar with this organization and its activities. Tell us a bit about it.
The Axis of Hope is created by a man named Carl Hobart, who publicly acknowledges the help and inspiration from Noam Chomsky, one of America's most vicious Israel and American loathers. And so this is a program where he pretends that he can teach American high school kids in a workshop how to create peace in the Middle East. Imagine that these little high school kids who don't have too much deep knowledge or wisdom are, by going through his workshop, going to be able to compose letters to the Secretary of State and to the President and to the head of the UN that will bring peace to the Middle East. And what is the suggestion of those letters? That there has to be, of course, a Palestinian state, and that will bring peace in our time. And the way that he does this workshop And we've had people attend it and take notes. And he actually shows much of it on his video. And so we've made a video of it. And it's pretty despicable. And he has been now taken into the arms of Boston University's School of Education, where he holds these seminars for teachers around the country. So we've made a film of that. We are fighting very hard with Boston University to get him disbarred, as it were. And I think we're making some progress.
This is such important work. And again, I salute you personally and your organization, Americans for Peace and Tolerance, because it's going on all around us. And this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a factual agenda, much of it enabled by the Muslim Brotherhood, consistent with the secret plan that, as I mentioned earlier, was introduced into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial. And a new ingredient in the mix, apparently, is you mentioned earlier the influx of a great many immigrants into this country from Syria and other parts of the Middle East. To what extent is that manifesting itself as well in the curricula of students in this country?
Well, this is a huge threat. And it's more than ironic and tragic that more than 11 major Jewish organizations are lobbying for the resettlement of Syrian refugees in this country, when we find out, and I just published yesterday at Breitbart, a study of Syrian textbooks, and in every Syrian who goes to school, which is every Syrian, learns horrible things about Jews, and about how we were the killers of prophets and that we are going to be damned forever, and it's the duty of every Syrian to engage in jihad, and jihad certainly includes the elimination of Israel and maybe its supporters. So when Hillary Clinton and President Obama want to bring in the Syrians here to show how wonderful we are, without vetting for that, they vet for a lot of other things. No one has vetted for anti-Semitism. And it's absolutely scandalous that the major Jewish organizations here are lobbying for the inclusion or the welcoming of Syrian refugees when these may hold deadly dangers to the Jewish community.
Charles Jacobs, we have to leave it at that for the moment. I will say that the what was once known as the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is making many millions of dollars on importing these potentially at least, quite problematic refugees into the country. And once they get them in, turning around and going and get their families. So it's a challenge of the first order. We salute the work you do at Americans for Peace and Tolerance and appreciate your visits with us from time to time. Do come back to us again very soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.